From the basement studios of the Atlantic Voice, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Any news this week before we get going? Any fajita news, Star Wars news, resolution news, anything in terms of your life that you want to keep us abreast of?
No fajita news.
Why? Is it because it's Lent? Have you given up fajitas for Lent? Are you Catholic?
No, but okay. So I don't really give up anything. I can just, I guess I observe Lent, but I don't give up anything for it. No,
that
just
haven't, good out.
Haven't had occasion to go for any more fajitas recently. I do, one of my gifts for Valentine's Day to me was, or the gift I got for Valentine's Day was a cooking class.
Oh.
So knife work.
Yeah. Oh, so they did that.
Yeah.
So tell us.
Well, I haven't gone yet.
Oh, okay.
Meaning it was a gift, so I'm going in, I think it's 3 weeks. It's on a Saturday night, you know, so we're gonna go and cook something.
Oh, so is it a combination of cooking and cooking skills? Do you know what I mean? Like, knife work is...
Well, it's not like training. It's not like we're going to sit there and, like, do a half an hour of onion cutting or anything like that.
Oh, but that's still a skill.
But it's like an... Yeah, but it's, you know, it's an hour of... What they usually do. I've done it before. I think it's
like home ec class. You want to take something home that you can eat.
Yeah, they give you, like, three recipes or something like that, and they have a class. You know, it's got, like, 20 people in it, and everybody goes through the different things, and, you know, I find them pretty interesting. The thing is, for the given items they are, it's not like, oh, I'm going to take that recipe home and I'm going to cook it over and over again, but whatever it is, you know, I can't remember what the item is that we're cooking this time around, but let's say it's seafood, you know, it tells you something about cooking shrimp.
Okay.
Then you can cook the shrimp, you know, you learn something about cooking shrimp in a different bunch of different ways and all kinds of things like that.
So it's cooking techniques rather than tool techniques.
Yes. It's not like
that's what
the class is not like knife skills per se. It's just I'm assuming there'll be a knife involved in it sometime.
I bet there might be some advice about, look, when you're holding your onion, grip it this way.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So hopefully I get some skills. So that's that news. And then in Star Wars, and you already know some of this, but you'll tell the rest of the world, it is pretty much confirmed that Leia, meaning Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker have signed on for the next for the next episode that's coming out.
What about Indiana Jones? Has he signed up?
You know, there was something from George Lucas that, and this is where they got the confirmations, because the other two had said things like that, but then George Lucas apparently was interviewed somewhere where he indicated that part of the negotiation of the value of this property being sold to Disney was, you know, do you have these people signed on? Because that would presumably have more value. Whether that's better as a movie or not, I don't know. But it certainly has more value to Disney if they know that the old stars are signed on.
Hopefully they are signed on. I think, as we know my position, those first three movies are good. Those last three movies sucked. Copyright Atlantic Voice.
This weekend on Saturday Live, they had a joke when they showed them up there on that little news update they do on Saturday Live. And they said... they then cut to a picture of Jar Jar Binks, and they said, "Misa late, waiting on the phone." You know, like basically, you know, you're bringing back the old stars. You must be bringing back Jar Jar Binks.
That was your Jar Jar Binks accent.
That's right.
Was it modeled on anything in particular?
Jar Jar Binks.
Okay. Let's move on. This week we have. I sent you an article the other week, which I read the headline. And I thought the headline was fascinating. From the Guardian newspaper back in the UK, although they have a very large US news gathering edition. And the headline was, "Killer robots must be stopped, say campaigners." So I clicked on it and I sort of read through and I sent it to you. So we decided this week we were going to talk about technology. And ultimately, let's start right at the top. Killer robots, explain.
Well, you know, it's complicated. It's a lot of things that are automating the art of warfare, so to speak. And that we've got the drones. Of course, people are pretty familiar. Oddly enough, I think we've talked about this before, but the drones, meaning all the drones being used in the Middle East and in other theaters of war, are a bigger news thing over in Europe, and people don't talk about it. There was, of course, this week.
This week it did become much bigger.
But up until now, it wasn't something that people really paid a lot of attention to here.
For the eight of you out there to actually read the blog, we actually discussed a little bit a side effect of the drone story this week.
That's right. Rand Paul, with his filibuster of the CIA nominee, was really about, was less about drone usage generally and more about, hey, are you going to use drones on us?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. They wanted to get an assurance from the Obama administration that they would not use it. I think what ultimately Eric Holder, you know, DOJ, had said, the quote was, they pledged not to use it on American citizens who aren't combatants. So in other words, if you're not engaged in combat against the United States, then you're probably all right. But That was the drone news. Actually, in related drone news, and this might be slightly off of the point of the article you said, the article I'd sent back was about the fact that an Alitalia pilot who was coming into JFK reported seeing a drone at 1,700 feet, 3 miles out from the airport. And by this, we don't, you know, you've seen the drones, the pilot, the plane-looking drones. You know, those are quite big items. You know, they must be about the size of a car or so. But this was apparently a 4 foot across helicopter-bladed item, which is similar to like you can
like
actually
a proper helicopter. Yeah,
well, meaning hobbyists can buy these things. You can these things, and there's a rule that says you're not allowed to fly them above 400 feet. Some sort of it's probably an FAA rule, but this thing was up at 1,700 feet. So possibly it was just somebody going beyond the bounds of what they're supposed to do with their little toy. You know, what it's got is a bunch of cameras in there. But it does highlight the fact that all these technology things that we're talking about, it's all nice to talk about when we talk about, well, maybe not nice is not the right word, but we talk about the government using it in military capacities, blah, blah, blah. But as we know about technology, and this is going to come up a couple times in discussions, what happens is it just gets cheaper and more people get it. And so the more you can automate these things, it's not hard to fathom that somebody just builds one in their backyard and suddenly they're flying around this thing over your head.
I give the pilot his due. He reported that in.
Yeah.
And normally they say that pilots don't like to report in anything. That's why they never report in UFO sightings, because they don't want to get suspended, because apparently it's like a no-no to be a pilot and start claiming that you're seeing stuff up there. Because if someone goes, oh, Dave keeps thinking he's seeing stuff, we need to ground him.
Yeah.
That, I just find that interesting that he was brave enough to report it. Maybe he'd been inspired by the story I didn't send you, that Russell Crowe is in the news this week. Because he claimed to have seen UFOs over Sydney.
Is that right?
Yes. Well. But apparently from 5 years ago. And he brought it out this week. And apparently he was upset because he got negative coverage for his speech at one of these awards things. Because remember he was in... He'd won... Les Miserables had won.
Yeah.
Remember he's in Les Miserables and he sung. Yeah. And apparently he'd given some press conference to talk about Les Miserables and it didn't get covered and he was upset because people were more interested in running a story about how the fact that he claimed he'd seen UFOs over Sydney.
I guess
I don't know where that leads us.
Just got to be happy for the attention, but I can see how pilots would be less likely to want to talk about UFOs. If Russell Crowe's talking about UFOs, maybe you don't want to talk about it.
But that's the thing. We all think Russell Crowe's probably a bit crazy.
Yeah.
So if you're a pilot and you're telling people that you're seeing UFOs and drones, if I'm sitting in the back, I'm going, I don't want that guy flying the plane. I'd rather have Denzel Washington flying the plane.
Yeah,
well, he wasn't in Les Miserables.
I was going to make a joke about him seeing Denzel Washington.
But he's done movies with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke about the pilot seeing Denzel Washington flying in a plane upside down or something like that kind of thing. But you know, I was trying to decide if an Italian accent would be appropriate for this story, but I decided it didn't really cut.
Well, it's a drone.
That's a real one, but you got, you know, if you're going to be comical, but it's like, that's a spicy drone up there. He's just right over here on my right wing. What's he doing over there? Get out of here.
See, now you're dealing in racial stereotypes. Even amongst robot technology, you're dealing in robot racial stereotypes.
I don't know if that's a racial stereotype.
Yeah.
It's a bad accent imitation, I think.
If there are a whole fleet of drones all in the same space honking their horns, then I could make some sort of Italian driving joke. But I'm not going to do that.
You're above that.
I'm above that.
All right.
But the drones are real.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying here is, as we start going into this killer robot story, in the UK, and across Europe, closed-circuit television has been huge for years.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has a CCTV camera.
Sure.
I'm fascinated. And even here in this country, there's more and more CCTV at the mall and CCTV at the airport.
A lot on the roads, traffic cameras.
Why is everyone upset about drones? All drones are. Is it just another camera?
Well, no, it doesn't matter. They're not. I mean, they carry missiles and things like that.
Well, but being spied on by a drone is no different than being spied on by a camera. The only difference is the drone is moving about. So if I'm come to terms with the fact that the camera is on me, I'm not going to get upset about the drone.
Yeah, I'm not really. You know, this is something I was going to talk about during this, is that the era of thinking that you can do anything you want to in your backyard and it's private, I think, is over. And I'm fine with that. You know, I don't really care. I'm not doing anything unusual in my backyard. But I don't think that's the biggest thing on the – isn't the cameras or the surveillance aspect, although there is an element to that. It's, you know, the weapons system. You know, the idea that – people may wage war. And, you know, on one level, it's not really much different than you know, a guided missile. Guided missile is, in a sense, a drone. Sure. It's designed to follow terrain and things like that. But the notion of automating this stuff, the front page picture on this article is one of the Terminator robots.
That's why,
right?
I read the article.
Like, if you really had things like this that become autonomous, that they sort of, you wind it up and it goes and it does what it's supposed to do, there is an element there of fear because of the fact that its judgments, when it gets to the point of doing what it's supposed to do, are not like a person. There's no...
Terminate the Two, Judgment Day, by its full title.
You've basically fired the bullet, assuming it's all automated, and you're not really following it and controlling it from some remote location. You've sort of fired the bullet, and what it does from there may be very complicated, but you can't get it back. It's like you can't get a bullet back from a gun. So that's the sort of fear on this stuff, is that when it runs into some situation, it's little, you know, it's just like we've seen in the movies, little robot eyes that go click, click, click,
exactly.
And the things are red and green. Maybe it picks the wrong things as red and green, and so that kind of freaks us out a little bit, the idea that this...
I must confess, I thought the whole story was a bit overblown, and there's a campaign to stop killer robots. Because ultimately, I understand that the killer robot could get out of control, and instead of killing the bad guys, start killing us. But why is it any different?
What was that movie? RoboCop. Yeah,
RoboCop.
The big one in the room there. It starts shooting everybody.
But RoboCop took him out.
Yeah.
Because he had some human in him.
That's right.
So,
exactly. Yes. There you go. All there is proof of the
system. So basically then, we're against killer robots, but killer robots made out of half-alive zombie humans is fine. That's what you're telling me.
I think that's all right, yes.
Okay, so...
Now, this led to another item we were talking about.
Well, I want to say this, though. If the killer robots are going against each other,
mm-hmm.
and, like, no regular people are getting hurt in the course of normal business, I'll take the risk of a couple of robots getting out of control and turning on us. I'll take that risk.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, if you could change wars to the extent you have them, I mean, you don't want to have them into strictly a machinery battle... Just like Real Steel with Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, that's right.
You could do it that way. Hey, that would be better. And you figure that's going to favor the country that spends the most money. And if there's anything we know we can do here is spend the most money.
And let me say this. Knowing that real life ultimately copies the movies. If I have a choice between Terminator, where the killer robots go berserk and kill the humans, I'd rather have that than, say, a Die Hard movie where all those guys are ex-military. And now they're attacking us and we have to be saved by Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
In Die Hard 2, they're all ex-military. So that's no different than our soldiers turning against us.
Hopefully you could just turn the robots off unlike
that's
soldiers.
That's my point. You can
right,
do
right.
that.
You can't turn
soldiers,
a soldier off
you can't
person,
do that.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when we were talking about this, I mentioned the company called Boston Dynamics that has... there's a series of videos out there.
We will link them on the blog.
Yeah, they have...
For those of you at home to watch, because these are... You need to watch these, even if you think we talk a lot of nonsense. Take a few minutes to watch these videos.
It's pretty interesting. So Boston Dynamics has a big contract with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects something. I'm not sure that's exactly right.
Don't worry about it. I think people are impressed that we're even going near this sort of level of high-tech scientific knowledge. I think we're already blowing our audience away that we even have a faint grasp of this.
I think we are blowing our audience away. Wait till they see how we bring it down to our level. So they have their main project that you'll see most videos, and you may have seen them online already, is the Big Dog, which is it's a robot that is basically a four-legged... looks vaguely doggish in the sense that it's four-legged and its legs operate like a dog's legs, you know, with where the elbows are and ankles and all that sort of stuff. There is a version that has a head, we'll mention in a second, but most of them don't have a head, and they they're autonomous in that they walk around. You can program them and do this sort of stuff, and there's a bunch of videos available of them, and they're, you know, you'd think, you know, it's not the most complicated thing to make a little robot that crawls along a floor.
Sure.
But here, what they've done is they've integrated cameras and gyroscopes and all kinds of things so that it, like, can't be knocked over and things like that. And the idea of this thing is it could be used in a defense capacity, I suppose. You could deliver weapons and things like that, but mostly sort of like a mule.
It could also deliver mail, couldn't it?
Well, that's right.
The U.S. Postal Service could use it.
The stories about it mostly are about it being acting like a mule that, you know, with the amount of gear that a soldier has to carry now and things like that, this thing can carry something like 300 or 400 pounds, and you could load it up and you set it on its way. It set some record for like the longest automated travel of 12 miles. It doesn't go very fast, although they do have other.
What does it run on? Because I didn't.
You know, I saw a thing that said it has an engine. It said an engine, but I don't know if that really meant. I would have to think it's a battery. Although it did say something about, well, it said refueling, recharging, whatever it is. But it makes some noise. It's lots of servos. Like, it operates, obviously, based on electronic stuff. But I don't know if the electricity is battery powered or if it's an engine. It wouldn't surprise me if it was like an internal combustion or other, some sort of fuel engine, because.
But like a car,
the batteries would be very heavy.
Like a car where you have, like, you know, a premium or diesel, I would suggest with the robot dog, it takes dry food only.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will make a robot mess.
Well, it might make a robot mess anyway. But what's weird is some of these videos that are out there are, it's obviously our evolution in terms of how we react to objects and things like that. You know, some things look cute and this doesn't look cute. I mean, it's just like a hunk of metal on top of legs, but the legs and the way it moves is just animal-like enough. One of the videos, and it's showing the balance of this thing.
It was amazing when you showed me, yeah.
The thing is walking around a parking lot, and the idea to show the balance, a guy walks up and, like, picks up his foot and kicks it, like, shoves it with the bottom of his foot so that the thing is, you know, hurls, like, 4 feet to the left. But it doesn't tip over. Like, in the legs, while they normally go forwards, backwards, the legs kind of sprawl out, like, kind of like a Bambi on the ice kind of thing, you know, where they're, like, slipping around, but holds itself upright. But immediately when you see this, you're like, that guy's a jerk. He just kicked the dog. And it's just a machine. But it's hard to not look at that and feel bad for the machine walking around.
When I saw the machine getting kicked, and the way it sort of staggered but didn't fall over and then righted itself, it looked just like me kicking my dog when I was a kid. Dog a boot and the boot, and I was amazed. It was so realistic, it looked like a real dog.
Wait a minute. Have you just talked about kicking a dog when you were a kid? Because we're going to have to stop a moment.
But this is what I'm saying.
I assume you're being facetious, right?
The robot dog
looked. We didn't kick dogs as a child.
The robot dog looked just like a dog that you might have given, like, a boot to, like, if he's coming and trying to eat your food, if you've put your food next to the couch and you give him a little tap, you know, just to sort of shoo him away. The robot dog looked just like that.
All right.
Although, again, this is my question now. Let's presume for a moment that I've given a dog a little tap when he's trying to nick my snacks on the floor. Why would I want to kick the robot dog? He's not going to steal my snacks.
Well,
so
no.
Why would I want to kick him?
Well, of course, if it's a defense item, it's, you know.
What, so all the enemy are going to come and try and kick the dog?
Well, probably try to do worse. But it's really about, also had the video of it walking through the snow. It was walking through, like, various things that you would say, okay, if it was a basic machine. And what's interesting is this company makes a number of different ones. So you talk about, like, reactions. One of the items crawls a vertical wall. Climbs up a vertical wall, and this one has six
legs.
Looked
like a spider.
Well, and that one has a different reaction, right?
Yes.
When you see that, you don't think, oh, there's some element of dog. You go, ooh, if that thing was coming up a wall, I would be frightened. You know, like, it's
well,
scary.
Yeah, I mean, I would take my magazine and splat it.
Exactly.
I don't take any chances with any of these animals.
So, but, you know, it's
splat or a little tap.
As a person, you know.
Again, let me stress, little tap, dogs were not harmed in the process of my childhood.
I mean, just think of where we're headed, right? If our reaction to this thing that barely looks like a dog, other than the fact that it's got four legs, and it's pretty big.
I cannot stress this enough, and I would implore people to click on the link and look at it. I was amazed. I mean, it moved.
Yeah.
The way the legs moved. I mean, you know, you've seen older pictures of robots. Like older, and they move very robotic.
You know, like, yeah, moving their arms. You can't see on the podcast, but we're both moving our arms.
Moving
around
arms like robots. Yeah. Very cliched. But when you click on this video and see this thing move with the four legs, it looks like an animal, a dog. I don't know. I guess a horse. Anything with four legs. It had this amazing sort of balance and movement.
Yes, there's a version.
And they've never replicated that with two-legged robots. That's why they give them wheels.
Right, but you can imagine how. If that's our reaction to that one, that when they make one that's more like a person and look, I mean, like, you put a skin on this thing, suddenly we're all going to be like, oh, nice dog, you know, kind of thing. And then it's going to, like, get you. Because obviously it could be used from a weapon standpoint. One of the other videos I didn't get to show you, but was a version of it that the dog had a head, so to speak. It's basically a neck that went out with a big claw on the front. And it was picking up cinder blocks, full-size cinder blocks, whipping them over its shoulder and throwing them 30 feet. Against the wall. And again, it was a balancing, I think, because what was interesting is when you see it flip around, it would stretch its legs out just like an animal would that was trying to fling something around and keep itself standing. I mean, it wasn't really about, wow, they throw cinder blocks around. You can make a lot of things that could throw cinder blocks around, but it picked it up, threw it back over its shoulder kind of thing. So, you know, the cute dog is going to come in there and just throw a cinder block at you, your reaction might be different.
It was pretty amazing, and it looks so lifelike in the set. And I, you know, you're right. You can imagine how emotionally you're going to feel. Again, if when you see it kicked, you feel bad for it.
Yeah.
In the same way that in Terminator, when Arnold is a good Terminator and he gets shot, you're like, Arnold, get up. But it doesn't matter because he's only a robot.
Now, so we
but
did.
You are then, like, you're like, ooh, Arnold. You and you could actually get Arnold because he's strong enough with muscles. He could throw some cinder blocks around as well.
I think the Boston Dynamics dog was maybe more human seeming than Arnold. it does bring to
a little less leathery.
You know, if they do are going to make these things not in a defense capacity, but they're going to make these robot dogs, is what kind of jobs are the regular dogs going to get? I mean, we're going to put all the regular dogs out of business because you'd have to feed them too much.
But you can't what just jobs do the regular dogs do? Okay,
they keep you company. Apparently, that's they get kicked by you, but...
You have the dogs that help blind people, so they're working dogs. You have the dogs that sniff out bombs, so they're working dogs. Uh-huh. But most other dogs, they're just hanging around the house, annoying you, looking for treats. Like, on TV, it's like, oh, the dog went to get the paper. I've never owned a dog that went out to get the paper in.
I need to put my hand over the microphone as I explain to Zeph that he's not really improving the human nature of this thing when he starts saying that dogs don't have any value. We all know dogs have tremendous value.
In South
we
Korea, like them they a lot. Eat them.
Yes,
so well, that is a value.
You can't eat a robot dog, right? So that'll work out. But no, the dogs are very important companions to people. We've been evolved together. Yeah, there's a whole thing going on there.
And those dogs that do the racing up in Alaska, that's like, yeah, I mean, they're like the top. That's like being in the NFL if you're a dog. If you're in that race across Alaska.
Yeah, I don't think they get the time off in the VIP lounge that the
but in the dog world, players do. In the dog world, they've got a certain cachet. Like, oh, yeah, you know, my cousin Ken, he's a pro athlete in Alaska.
Yeah, well, they're the toughest dogs.
Oh, like really? My buddy Dave works for the DEA. Do you know what I mean? When dogs talk to each other, there's a lot of that.
You know, they're the tough dogs, you know, and not everybody's going to be attracted to the tough dogs, meaning in the dog world, right? So, you know, some dogs might be like a more intelligent and bookish dog.
Which the robot dog is going to be able to do everything.
Yeah, a friend of mine had a dog that could read.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Allowed?
No, not allowed.
But his lips
it's a dog. What are you talking about?
How does he know that the dog can read? We're staying on technology, but I do need to get an answer to this. How did your friend know that the dog could read? If he doesn't move his lips,
I don't know
he
if my friend knew.
Bark.
I knew that Rudy could read. Rudy would.
Oh, so you now think that? Oh, dearie me. Okay. I'm going to leave it there. That's
really?
The claim.
I mean, not
Eric knows the dog.
It's mostly
that can
young
read.
Adult fiction. I mean, so it wasn't like a high level of book, but Rudy was a reader.
Are you sure he wasn't just looking at the pictures?
Rudy was a she.
All right, whatever. Oh, with a boy's name. That's what messed her up.
Wait, Rudy?
I don't know any girls named Rudy.
You don't?
No.
Rudy Huxtable from Cosby Show?
Was that the name?
Yeah.
Oh.
The youngest one was Rudy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I guess it can be either. I don't know
what Rudy's a boy's name.
I think it's both, apparently.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on.
keeping up with our technology theme, you know, this is sort of interesting to talk about the warfare. So, but that's you know, it's got a serious aspect to it. We didn't actually talk about the drone pilots. You know, the geeks. Now
we've heard this for years, though.
There is some controversy in
that the armed services want to recruit people whose background is in video games because that's the way it's going now.
Yeah, what was the Lou Gossett Jr. movie?
Iron Eagle.
No, the other
yes,
one.
Iron
the
Eagle.
One where he was like a lizard
Enemy
and they
mine.
Recruited the kid. Oh, you
what
know,
lizard?
I'm
you're getting your Lou Gossett Jr.
I'm confusing my bad movies. It was The Last Starfighter.
No, that's not Louis Gossett Jr.
No, it's not. You're right. I got my person wrong. It's another guy.
Louis Gossett Jr., though, was an alien that looked like a lizard in a movie with Dennis Quaid.
That's right. Yeah, Enemy Mine.
But Louis Quaid was also in a military movie about flying things called Iron Eagle. Iron Eagle 1, 2, 3, and 4.
There's a lizard in The Last Starfighter.
Okay, but that's not Louis Gossett Jr.
No.
That's a bunch of other B-movie stars.
That must be why I confused it.
All right, so anyway.
I don't know who played the lizard. But
I know the film you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So the Last Starfighter, they recruit the kid because he plays the video games. They recruit
old
him
school
to be
video
a,
games, too.
They recruit him to be an actual starfighter pilot. Basically, the premise is that the video game was like a recruiting tool. Well, nowadays, in fact, they're now training more drone pilots than they are real pilots in the military. And they say, at least according to articles, they're actually looking for people who are good at video games, which is, you know.
is of deep concern to me.
Yeah, it makes me a little nervous because that it's going to be a bunch of acne-covered, doughy boys, maybe girls, sitting in a room piloting the drones around. You know, you said you weren't worried about their surveillance things.
I'm worried now.
Yeah, I'd be worried. You know, who knows what they're looking about? Look, they're going to go through your underwear drawer or something
like
that.
Some fella who spends 8 hours in his basement playing one of those, I don't know, warfare games, eating Doritos, and maybe having an occasional puff on a substance legal in California, I don't want him flying some drone about.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. I mean, it's kind of interesting that that's what it's going
to
be.
But let me ask you something. To your knowledge, if they're recruiting these sort of people to fly drones, how are they going to attract them to the military? Because if I'm the sort of fellow who just likes to kick back in my basement with like a 2 liter Coke and just play video games all day, I don't want to be hearing that I've got to be marching up and down, cutting my hair short, calling everyone yes, sir, no, sir. Because the military aren't going to relax those things.
I'm guessing well, I don't know about that. I mean, why does it matter? I mean, if your whole job is to sit in a chair in a darkened room and watch cameras and pilot these little things around, it's not really going to matter. Now, I mean, you do have a certain amount of discipline, but maybe you can do it all mentally. It doesn't really matter whether you're able to march anywhere, but you do have to follow the orders, right?
You can't
have the person who's like, ah, screw this, I'm taking my drone off to Saigon or something like that.
If I'm in my house all weekend with the blinds closed playing video games, am I really the sort of person that a proper army wants to put in charge of a deadly weapon?
Apparently.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I've got some real concerns that they're chasing down people who are good at video games to be in the army.
Yeah.
I am more worried by that than I am by killer robots.
All right. That's enough to be worried.
I'm making my position. I'm more worried about that than I am about people hassling me for giving the dog a tap. I am more concerned that Joe Stoner video game guy is now going to be in charge of a nuclear weapon flying over my house.
Yeah.
More concerned by that.
That's creepy.
Right.
Maybe they have to two-stage it. Maybe they have to have somebody in charge of the weapon. The other person's just like a pilot. You know, they're just like a functionary kind of thing. They can pilot the thing, but they can't really control anything.
Exactly.
We've come up with a solution for that. But bringing it closer to home and maybe a lighter topic, you know, this same sort of technology thing is making its way into something near and dear to our heart, which is cars.
That's right.
Right? You know,
And let me just say this. We have 2 car episodes sitting on the pod. So if you haven't listened, please go back and listen to our Auto Show specials.
More car episodes to come. Wait, I've gotten a couple of stories
from
people's personal car stories. I am waiting for more personal car stories so we can do a big episode all about people's personal connections and anecdotes and things they have from the cars they've owned in the past.
If your story is good, we will put you via the telephone on the show.
It's a big commitment.
But I'm throwing it out there as a way to, you know, I've always wanted to be in podcasting.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out.
Yeah.
Cars, so one example.
It can't be too funny because then one of us might get replaced. And not by a robot.
We're irreplaceable. the first one's only on a particular item, which I the Rolls-Royce Wraith. Say that 3 times fast, which is I think a successor to their Ghost. So it's like their top line, and it's keeping up that theme of these sort of
super expensive,
ethereal kind of cars. Yeah, the article I have is their press release, which quotes the price in euros only. So I don't know the translation, but it's this car is going to be starting at 245,000 euros. So I think that's something in the 350,000.
I think it
range.
Depends where in the euro you are. If you're in Greece, that's worth about $15.
No, that's not the way the euro works. Everybody ignore that. That is no help to you whatsoever in understanding world finance. A euro's a euro.
Okay.
But anyway, they have technology in there, of course. You know, you got your typical thing, and a lot of cars are moving to having an internet connection or GPS-related stuff. Well, here's the interesting thing.
So many have got GPS now.
Yeah, so this uses the GPS, from their press release. They have satellite aided transmission. It uses the GPS to see beyond what you see, and so it can know the way you're driving and know there's a bend coming up here, or you're going to be going uphill or downhill, and adjust the automatic transmission accordingly. Drop down a gear in advance of what's coming up, you know, things like that. So it's like, you know, in the rally cars, the person in the second seat does it, like, you're doing this turn, you're doing that turn type of thing. You don't even have to see it. The car is actually looking at where you're driving and figures out, you know, oh, you should be in a lower gear here. Or, you know, throw up in a higher gear. We're just doing a straightaway for a long time, things like that. Now, that's kind of a fascinating use of this stuff that there's this GPS, the GPS is going to do that.
Why? Let me ask you a question. Why would I want assistance in actually driving the car? If I'm dropping all that money on a car, if I don't want to actually drive the thing or I need help driving the thing, I might as well just employ a driver and buy a cheaper car. Get a cab.
You're still driving the car, but it's making it tell. That's like saying, well, I don't want to have anti-lock brakes because I don't want the computer figuring out how to stop the car in a
That's different. That's a safety feature. But having the thing select the gear for me and then there's a bend coming up and start moving the steering wheel.
No,
I might as well just sit in the back.
I mean, the steering wheel moving is coming soon, you know, as an option. And that might have some merit in some certain context.
That was in another Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Total Recall. He gets in the cab, the Johnny cab.
Yes.
And it's a little automatic cab, and it drives for him.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, we're definitely going to head to that sort of stuff. The other technology, I don't know if I'd call it technology thing that's in the Rolls
Royce. I never realized Arnold Schwarzenegger was so prescient for our future.
He has done a lot of movies that go into the future.
You know, whatever Arnold says is how it's going to be. He is the Nostradamus of our time.
Oh, boy.
We're in trouble.
So
what else can this car do?
Well, the car is actually not too many. We'll talk about technology cars more off, but since while we're talking about the Rolls Royce, the interior ambiance is complemented by the Starlight Headliner, a bespoke feature available for cars for the first time. This has 1,340 fiber optic lamps hand woven into the roof lining in order to give the impression of a glittering starry night sky.
Why not just get a sunroof?
It's probably got a sunroof too, but maybe
so
it's
even
cloudy.
In the day? Even in the day, it looks starry?
I'm sure you could turn it off. I don't think you're mandated that you have to have the stars, but, you know, like, you know, there's a nice little perk there. Now, well, you know, the...
okay.
You could have the stars. Well, so cars generally are getting more and more and more connected. You know, there's a lot of things out there. There's a company called ABI Research, and some of the stuff I'll mention here comes from an article in the Washington Post about web-connected cars bringing privacy concerns.
Yes, I read that, too, and I'm concerned as well.
Yeah, the thought is by 2017, so probably 5 years ago when they were doing the study, I was trying to think, why would you do a study that talks about what's going to happen 4 years? Almost certainly this study was last year, and it's 5 years in advance, that predicts that 60% of cars worldwide and probably 80% of cars in the United States will be connected to the internet in some fashion.
I read that too.
And just like, you know, we just mentioned one example with the Rolls-Royce having availability of being connected there, that... You know, cars can be connected to the internet and be able to tell you things. I mean, there's certainly things, and using the GPS and data and things like that, there's certainly things that could be of merit, you know, in terms of figuring out who is at fault in an article, in a crash or something like that. But when you look at all the different things that cars have, you know, like a lot of cars not only have backup cameras now, but have cameras on all four sides of the car. Have you seen the pictures of the cars that you can park where you can see 380 degrees on the ground? 380 degrees would be pretty good, but it's only 360 degrees around the car that you see where they have cameras all around. It's available on the Infinities, and I'm sure it's available on other cars. But so when you look at the picture, it shows you on the dashboard a picture of the car with everything around you on the ground. So you know when you're about to hit somebody because it's got cameras up at the edges of the car all the way around. You can just look at the thing and figure out where it's going to go. And that's not so much internet, but the fact that you've got all these cameras, right? Those can be connected to the internet. You could have like just an amazing amount of information gathering on going on from the from the cars.
Let me digress for a moment while you go through your paperwork there for the facts. I have a real problem.
I like the fact that you're gonna say you're gonna digress while I get facts. So let's just be clear that the next 30 seconds will probably not have any facts in them.
I don't like parking cameras. I was taught to drive. And back in the UK, the driving test is one of the differences between the UK and the US. Back in England, the driving test is an hour, very intensive. You have to learn on a stick shift with a clutch. You have to parallel park. You have to reverse around a corner.
Do you have to figure out how to feed your horse also during that?
Dry food only.
Okay.
You have to do all those things in order to get your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you just go out and drive around the block, pull into a parking spot, boom, and there you go.
Well,
I know it's got harder now, but what I'm saying is, when I park my car, and again, I'm of indeterminate middle age, It is an automatic reaction when I'm parallel parking to look over my shoulder. Right? To look back as I turn the steering wheel to back into the space. If I was...
parallel parking, you look over your shoulder?
Well, yeah, you look back across your shoulder into the space, into the window, and into the space you're reversing into.
Really?
You're reversing back into the space. I look back over my shoulder, whatever way I'm going, to see out the back of the car. Because that's the end going in first.
No, wait a minute. I can parallel park a car by looking in the mirrors.
No, I don't. I don't need to
turn around and look out the back window.
That's why I'm an extremely good parallel parker. I have like a 90%
You're so old school. Rate. You're so old school. You won't rely on mirrors in your car.
But this is my point. It's like the same thing. I have to look back over my shoulder. If I'm not looking over my shoulder and I'm looking forward, but the car is going backwards, I feel like I'm not in control. I have to see where I'm going. So that's why I don't like parking cameras. Because then I'm looking forward and that it unsettles me.
Again, I mean, I've said this before, but I think we're talking about a ZEF issue and not really a car issue at this point. No. I would be interested in knowing how many people actually look over their shoulder to parallel park a car, because I parallel park a car and I don't have backup cameras. I just look in the mirrors.
Well, with all due respect, your driving test probably wasn't very intensive.
No, in fact, my driving test way back when included parallel parking, 3-point turns, the whole bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
And they never taught you to look back over your shoulder?
No.
What about reversing around the corner? Did you do it all with the mirror?
Reversing around a corner.
All right. So you're sitting on the side of the road.
Yeah.
You have to reverse and back your car, like at an intersection, back around the corner. Do a 90-degree reverse turn. That is part of the driving test in England when I was a kid.
Does it ever come? Like the parallel parking 3-point turns come up when you do things. When do you ever have to back around a 90-degree turn in your life?
I have to do it sometimes when I can't be bothered to do it, like a U-turn. If there's not enough room for a 3-point turn, like it's a narrow street, the only way to get room is to reverse into the cross street to then get out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, I mean, there you go. Boom.
I can't.
Let me check.
Can a robot really need to do that? Yes, a robot definitely could do that. This is the whole thing. These parallel parts. Forget about your cameras. You know, I mean, this is not new. Great new news. But
all right. So did we got
there's
cameras
a lot
on?
Of. Par-
right.
They just had it on Top Gear. The car that Jeremy Clarkson parks itself. You know, like parallel parking itself. It can do that sort of stuff.
So what's the fun of having a car though?
Trust me, I don't think parallel parking is the fun of having a car. Listen, I'm proud of my parallel parking. In another life, I would have been a ferry boat. I always thought if I had to fall back on a purely labor job,
okay.
I would want to be the guy or girl. Well, I want to be the guy, but you know, there are guys and girls who do this, who put the cars on the ferry boats.
Oh, okay.
Where they pack them all in, where they're like 2 inches apart from each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of fun, like, for me, like sticking a car into funny spots like that. Mind you, I know how to use the mirrors, and I can actually look in there. I don't have to turn my head around all the time.
First of all, you said you wanted to be a ferry boat captain, and I thought I'd like to see you reverse that around a corner.
Now, that's a lot tougher. But
okay, but let me say this. This is my point before we continue with the car technology. I'm all for robots to do things that I don't want to do. So robot soldiers, great. Get out there and shoot each other. No one gets hurt. But driving a car is a pleasurable experience. Why would I want a vehicle that's taking that pleasure away from me?
I think it's not inappropriate to have a car that gives you the option, because sometimes those pleasurable experiences can be annoying experiences.
All right, let's hear it.
For example, you like a stick shift car. I know you drive a stick shift. Do you like a stick shift car driving in stop and go traffic for 2 hours?
It's a hassle, but that's part of being a driver.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a car that you could do both? I can use the stick shift when it's enjoyable. I don't have to use the stick shift when it's not enjoyable.
All right.
Like, maybe sometimes you're very excited about your around 90-degree turns. You enjoy this a lot. This is fun.
Okay.
Maybe another time you're in a rush and you're like, I don't want to deal with this sort of stuff. And if the car could do it for you, that would be nice.
All right.
Let's say, here's what I think might be the greatest thing about these automated cars, right?
Okay.
You go out and you had a couple of drinks, a couple of glasses of wine, a couple of beers. You shouldn't be driving a car. Instead of having to call a cab to get home, if your car was fully automated and could get you home, it's got no judgment problems. It knows how to steer. It knows the road and stuff like that. It's totally reasonable to expect that in the future, a car will be able to tell where the road is and will get you around places without the need for you to do anything. I'm not saying we're all going to enjoy that all the time. I would like to drive my car, but I would like to maybe sometimes press a button. Heck, you know, maybe I don't even have to be in the car. Maybe if I want to parallel park a car, this would be great, right? You could pull up somewhere. You want to hurry into the store? You hop out of the car, you press a button, you walk away.
You say to the car, drive around the block for 10 minutes.
Maybe drive around the block, here. But I was thinking park. But either way, you know, like, go do something and then come back and get me. I mean, we would all have our own Batmobile, basically.
Okay.
You know, it can do all this sort of stuff. We totally wandered off of the privacy aspect of this. I mean, all
that
these
is
things,
a concern to
well,
me.
All these things we're talking about now are you could do it inside of the car automatically.
This is a concern to me. This,
but you can certainly have ones where the where
because I
it
don't
connects
want...
into the internet to yes. get data and things like that. You know, I mean, there are you know the, we mentioned the gear shift type of thing. There's certainly things that could keep track of what's going on, what's the weather ahead, make adjustments. Maybe your two wheel drive switches to all wheel drive when you're going to be encountering wet roads because
okay.
it download the data from the weather channel or whatever the heck source of things go on there. Of course, all these things are feeding data up all the time, stuff like that, which is where people get creeped out. But that's actually less funny as I'm thinking about it. It's less stories that we can make
because
jokes
people
about
can be
stuff.
Like tracking you when you're speeding and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
I also know this. People are concerned about killer robots turning on us, right?
Right.
So they seem to be from these news articles.
I mean, we all should be.
I'm more concerned about my car turning on me. I don't want to buy some car, and I've got GPS in my car. I have a lady's voice that talks to me. Take a left here. You have arrived. Take a right turn in 800 feet. I don't want some self-righteous car bleeding onto me going, you're going too fast again. Ooh, once again, you're changing lane without signaling. I don't need to be lectured by my car, and I don't want my car to then turn me into the police going, I don't know what to tell you. Here he is over speeding again for three times. Give him a ticket. It's the only way he's going to learn.
You know, I thought of that.
I don't want...
You don't want a car to be a nag.
I don't want a car to be a nag, and then I don't want a car to dob me in it with the police for speeding or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I think...
And all these cars with computers are now going to be able to do that.
There's an issue there that the cars and...
Killer robots
just
don't care.
Just like
nagging cars,
applications on phones and things like that have now forged ahead of the legal precedents. I think the normal rules of the world will still apply in that police can't just get data about you without having a certain amount of cause. They can see things outside car. They can't, for example, search you without any reason. So this.
But what's a CCTV? What's a speed camera?
That's exterior. It's public. You're in the public.
But how is this any different from your car turning you in for speeding?
Because that's private. That's what you're internally doing. Now, the speeding thing might be different, but I don't think...
Because now, if every car's got all this stuff in it, the concern is Big Brother is watching you. They can track where you're
going. Well, there is a rule.
They can track anything. They can track when you're going. They can track when you open the car door. They can track when you fill up. The computer is going to give away your whereabouts.
Now, we're really going to get into an area here because I'm...
So you were concerned about my confusion between trademark and copyright. But right now, this week, I've brought up a very serious legal issue.
It is. And
there's no confusion at all.
We will have to call a lawyer who practices more in this area. But, of course, the Fifth Amendment says you're not required to implicate yourself. So, like, for example, you can't be required to testify against yourself if you're criminally prosecuted. Like, it's not – if they say, listen, did you do the crime? You can just refuse to talk about it. You're not required to say –
But that's not stopping my car.
But it might
the same way a killer robot can try and kill me, like Terminator.
See, cars, you know, I know we just talked about anthropomorphizing things, but the car would still be a robot, and so the robot would really just be a tool of yours, and could you block that sort of thing that
then,
way?
Then, to go back to the robot dog, if I want to give it a whack, I don't see what the problem is.
We just get a hacker's to... Well, no, I don't care about kicking a robot dog. It's you kicking the real dogs was what I was concerned about.
That's why I'm going to get a robot dog. And I'm going to use it away, and I don't have any animal rights people hassling me.
Yep. That made me think of something else on the cars, and then I've forgotten what it was all. Oh, here what it was. You know, you mentioned that it, like, telling you to go slower, right? I'm trying to be a glasses half full kind of guy.
Okay.
What if the cars would also make people go faster who drove too slow in the wrong lane? What if, like, you know, the idea...
I'm up for that.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
up for that.
Like, you know, like that basically, if a car was in the last lane, the column, it would show...
When Grandpa is
camera.
Out there going, like, 45 in
exactly.
the fast lane,
right.
Then his Chevy needs to kick in and get him out of the way.
Or if the cameras would show that the right lane is empty, it pushes you over in the right lane, says, get out of the way of the people behind you who are trying to go faster kind of thing. You know, this always a potential upside
to these
things.
No, there are some upsides to it. but, again, I'm concerned about the car turning me into the police for speeding.
Yep. Well, you know, we talk about car technology.
Which has a higher ticket from the police? Cruelty to animals or speeding? Which is a more serious offense in the eyes of the law?
Probably, well, there's different degrees for each of those. But I'm going to guess it's probably the cruelty to animals.
All right. So I'll get the robot dog.
I mean, real genuine cruelty to animals.
That's like what I'm saying. Like, just giving like him a tap when he's stealing my food, that's not cruelty.
No, that's not,
like, dude, come
on. That's not going to be prosecuted as a felony or anything like that. But, you know, Michael Vick went to jail for a very long, well, not a very long time, but a while. Something that you would not go for. No matter how fast you were driving, you weren't going to be going to jail for years, you know, as a result. So I think there's got to be a differentiator there.
I have a Michael Vick comment, but I'm going to leave it well alone.
Well, you know, we just talked about, like, cars, big item around you, all that sort of stuff. But, of course, what happens to computer technology? It gets smaller, gets more, you know, involved with you personally.
This stuff is here and now real.
Wearable technology.
That's here and now.
You know, so, you know, we've got these smartphones that in some ways are sort of augmenting your intelligence. I mean, it's like a running joke about how, you know, you can't ever have any, like, trivia debates with anybody anymore because somebody will pull out a cell phone so they immediately get this information.
Actually, I'm concerned about a cell phone replacing me on this show, frankly, because it probably knows more than I do.
It's never kicked a dog either, I'm guessing.
Fair enough.
but the next wave of this sort of stuff, and it was in the news a bit this week because of the Google Glasses.
Yes.
Google, it's actually not Google Glasses, it's Google Glass, singular.
Yeah, because it's only on one eye.
Yeah, that's one argument for it. There's...
And that's not the singer that was killed. We established that.
I think the notion is it's not a pair of glasses. It's like looking at the world through glass. And they call it, in that case, they call it augmented reality.
Because what it is, basically, for those of you that haven't seen this, it's designed like a pair of spectacles, but basically off the front of your forehead is a small, like, lens, and onto that it projects a computer screen.
It's projecting in the inside of your lens of your glasses. So it doesn't really stick out. I mean, it sticks out more than a regular pair of glasses, but it just barely. And Google's been trying out
different versions. So it's like having your own heads-up display. That's like there are some cars for years that have had heads-up. It's like having your own heads-up display, and you can surf the net and do all kinds of stuff.
You could freeze a picture of whatever it is you're looking on at that moment. You know, take a photo of this kind of thing. Bang.
Does it talk to you?
You know,
I'd get like a headphone.
I don't know if it has it in there yet, but. Stands to reason. That would be another part of it, right? Because, you know, it's pretty easy. They actually wouldn't even have to stick in your ear because you can give yourself sound right through that little bone behind your ear, like, you know, little conducting temples and things like that. But this is the whole new thing. And, like, so it would be able to give you data on what you're doing and things like that. I mean, the classic example when they talk about augmented reality is, you know, right now you might be somewhere, you search on Google, right? You search on Google on the computer and you've got to look up an address and, oh, what's around there? There's these restaurants and stuff like that. Well, now with a smartphone, which can tell where you are, you can just punch up your Google thing and it'll immediately tell, oh, I know where you are. Look across the street, there's this and stuff like that.
You use the phone as a keyboard, right?
Right.
It's hooked in with the glasses and so that's...
Well, that's one way to do it, but, you know, I could be
standing... Let me ask you a question. Why can't, if you're looking at the phone anyway to type in, why don't you just use the screen on the phone?
Well, you could. But I'm saying,
so why do
you
I
might,
need the glass?
My point is, ultimately, you wouldn't have to take out the phone. The idea is, like, I could be just standing on a corner, and I say, I could just...
I missed that.
So, what kind of restaurants are right? I was using the phone as an example in between. Like a computer, you got to put in where you are, all that sort of stuff. The phone knows where you are. Well, now you're taking it the next step where literally you're standing on a corner and you go like, I'm hungry. You know, the stuff in the glass presumably hears you. You know, I don't know if it can do that yet, but let's assume that's where it's going to go. And it would show up on the screen what you're looking at. Like, so I'm looking at a building over there, and it will put a sign that says, oh, that's this restaurant. It's got 3 stars from Zagat. You know, it's got put this around the area. You know, that's a cheap eats place kind of thing like that. And you could just be looking around, and it would be able to tell you all the things that are going on around you. And that's what this is all a long way, if I hadn't gotten interrupted a couple times along the way. It's augmented reality. Describing what augmented reality is, adding these pieces in. There's also versions of that, like, for games and stuff like that. I mean, even the... I think it's one of the Nintendo handheld games where it has a camera and you're looking sort of through it because it's got a camera on the opposite side. So when you look at the screen, it might be showing the table in front of you.
Okay.
But then it'll put stuff there. You know, like in the picture, it'll have like little cartoon characters and things like that. That's another version. But here we're trying to use it as a tool. And so you'd have these things that in the glasses that are letting you see all these interesting things or check out stuff. Or maybe it's, you know, just puts up a reminder, hey, you're supposed to be somewhere in 15 minutes, get to it kind of thing, and it's no more pulling out your phone and all that
stuff. Yeah, and so it's like having a computerized butler.
Yep, yep. And the funny thing is, I remember hearing this about this a number of years ago. Michael Saylor, who's a big tech guy in the Washington area here, MicroStrategies, I think, was his company. But he was, I remember reading an article, and this had to be 10 years ago, where he talked about, you know, with all this information that was out on the internet, that the real trick would be to plug it in. And the glasses are one way of plugging it in. But what if you could connect it right into your brain? Like, literally, like, he was talking about how you could
end up... I might get through life more effectively.
Well, this is the thing, is you could become effectively a more intelligent person, a more knowledgeable person, without ever having to learn anything, if basically you have the wealth of the internet's information plugged in. Like, so, like he used an example, you might be driving down a highway, and I guess this would work with the glasses too, but you'd be driving down the highway, and it would say, you know, this exit has these things, you know, there's these things available, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to know that. You never have to look it up before. Bang, it's in your head, and you know what's going on there.
If there is concern, if there is concern, though, about technology turning against us, I would think hooking me up to the computer is going to, that's going to set off this chain reaction of technology turning against us. Because while I'm being helped by the computer, if I'm that computer, I'm going through life thinking, I'm carrying this guy around.
That's right.
He can't do anything for himself. Well, what do I need him for? I could just take over myself.
With the computers rising up, isn't that usually the plot of the movies?
That's always what happens. What do we need people
say,
for?
People are flawed, and we should just get rid of them kind of thing. And it could be because of Zeph.
So
if we connect Zeph into the computers, that could be the thing that breaks the computers back, and they go, the heck with you people, if I have to deal with this dog-kicking guy.
That's right, and the computers are going to turn on man. And again, I think we've established from the car driving thing, I don't even want the technology anyway.
Yeah.
And yet I would be the reason that the technology would turn on us.
Right, we should back up because I did, you know, we jumped right to the plug it into your brain, but that's not where we were, because let's talk about what's actually out there, which is these glasses.
And there
glasses.
Is stuff out there.
Yeah, the glasses. I mean,
but the clothing, too.
In the next year or so be out there. Like, what have you seen in the way of clothing? I mean, certainly there's things that could be like, oh, you're cold. It heats up, right? And that kind of thing.
Well, no, but what I mean also, too, like, the actual system is integrated into your clothing. I don't know how many of you watch the NFL, but obviously there are certain games where the quarterback has written,
right,
he's written
the plays
on his arm.
Thing.
So he's carrying it around on his arm so he can look at the play and then run the play.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's clothing that's actually designed so that there is, like, a little sort of screen in your sleeve. So, again, if you're getting lost, if you don't have the glasses, you just flip over your sleeve and it's like, oh, yeah, it's down here towards the really nice 3-star rated Zagat restaurant. So what I'm saying is the technology is integrated into the clothing. I think there's clothing that, you know, like jackets and stuff, when it gets too cold.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
They activate the insulation. So you can leave the house with one jacket on if, you know, you're thinking, oh, I don't know if it's going to rain today or not, or I don't know if it's going to get cool. You wear one jacket, the temperature drops, bang, jacket takes over,
and
keeps you warm.
Fills up with air or something like that, you know. That makes the first one's just really a screen, right? You know, like, okay, we could do that sort of stuff. But that's the interesting part, is what other things could it do? Like, maybe it perceives that you've been spending too much time at fast food restaurants, and so if you, like, you know, by using the GPS system, it notices you making a move towards
your
McDonald's.
Belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it cinches you down and says, like,
good,
hey, buddy, get a grip here.
If you're talking to a member of the opposite sex, it changes color to make you more attractive.
That would be nice. Do you remember they had did they have this in England in the 80s, the shirts that change colors based on temperature you were? Like, you know, there's these
various
type of things.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
They had those for a while. I forget what they were, but, you know, basically it was like a shirt, you'd put it on, it would start blue, but as you heat it up, it would turn red or something like that. It would change temperatures, change colors and things like that. But, you know, it could gather. Actually, that's the interesting part. Just like what it could do for you, what information is going to gather from you? You know, it gathers the fact that you had too much fast food, or you're getting a little chunky around the middle.
You have bad BO.
Yeah, exactly. That would be good.
See, and then
kind of fix you up.
It's got like a little pouch, and when you're sweating, it goes and it lets a little sort of like a nice odor out. And you're there. And if I'm sitting with you now, you're probably thinking, ooh, Zeph suddenly smells of lavender.
Yeah.
Whereas really, I'm stinking badly, but my shirt is stepping in for me.
Have you seen anything about these blue e-cigarettes?
I've seen it on TV, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, because I don't smoke, I'm kind of like, ooh, that looks like an electronic cigarette. And then I just move on. It doesn't hold my attention.
Yeah. So I was
because
looking at...
Because in my electronic car, there's a no-smoking sign.
Mostly I was checking to figure out how did Steve Dorff, you know, Steve Dorff is an actor who
yes.
we haven't seen in basically anything for a long time. Well, he's now, like, the spokesman for these blue cigarettes. Yeah. BLU, with the little, they have little glowing blue tips, so I think it's supposed to look like a cigarette, but it doesn't act like a cigarette. What it does is it vaporizes these cartridges of nicotine flavored stuff, and like, so it makes it look like you're smoking, but it's no actual smoke, so it's supposed to be less harm. Obviously, nicotine has its own harm, but you're not intaking the tar and the. And
that was what confused me.
It's supposed to not annoy other people.
Because I'm not.
It doesn't smell a bunch. And,
that's what confused me, because I wasn't a smoker. I was always under the assumption that obviously the smoke was bad for you, but also the nicotine.
Yeah,
has negative
it's still
effects.
Bad for you. I mean, like,
well, that's the thing. I saw one of these adverts for this electronic cigarette, and then they'd said at the bottom something along the lines of, you know, it's not going to hurt you. And I'm watching the advert thinking, but it is going to hurt me because I'm still taking in nicotine.
Yeah, apparently there's, like, you can get cartridges that don't even have nicotine, but I'm going to guess that
so what's the point?
Use it. Well, exactly.
Just suck on a pencil.
I think, well...
Oh, so you're buying a stick to stick in your mouth.
I suspect maybe it's something that they're hoping is going to be cool, but the reason I mention this...
I'll give you a packet of Big Biros for $2. Yeah, get stuck into that lot.
The next
Bix.
The next Atlantic Voice tech podcast we put out, maybe we'll have to talk about blue cigarettes, but one of the things it has is, so it comes in a... The pack obviously doesn't matter because they're not disposable. You don't like buy a new pack. The pack is actually a charger for the batteries in there.
But it looks like a Zippo.
Yeah,
a Zippo.
No, it looks just like a cigarette pack.
Oh, I thought
like the blue ones. No, it's a little smaller, but it's got the same flip top as like a hard top cigarette pack. But it has. I just saw today. It has a thing in it. It's got a short range Wi-Fi or something like that.
All right.
But if anybody else has a blue pack within 50 feet of you, or you pass by a store that has a blue pack within 50, it buzzes. So the idea being, like, there's a social networking aspect to this sort of thing.
I
so
like
if you're, I'll say, loser blue cigarette smoker, I don't know how many blue cigarette smokers we have listening, it tells you, like, while you're in the restaurant, it goes, buzz, somebody else here has this thing. You know, like,
oh, in case you need to bum an electronic cigarette.
I mean, the thing is, the whole point is you're not supposed to have to go out in the back and have a break or anything like that, or you need to charge something. Like, you know, it used to be cigarettes. You don't. I could see if your actual cigarette packs told you that actual cigarette smokers, that might be interesting to you because somebody might go out front and have a cigarette break with you because you can't smoke in the restaurants. But why the heck this thing needs to buzz and tell you somebody else in this room is desperate enough that they went and bought this stupid LED lit up cigarette type thing, you know, kind of thing.
But if it's not giving off smoke, then... You're not breaking the no-smoking rule.
Yeah, no, that's what they say. I mean, I'd be amazed if you don't
because there's no rule about
somewhere.
Having a very small flashlight
says you
in
can,
your mouth.
You can have
unless
it
the at, restaurant says no small electronic flashlights in your mouth.
Yeah.
Because that's all it is a little light.
You could have it at sporting. You could have it at all these sort of things where theoretically you couldn't have a cigarette now. But that's sort of tangential. So we'll have to come back to that. But, you know, the same sort of thing it made me think could apply to, like, the clothing type things or the other types of wearable tech. You know, if you're... I mean, think about this. I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head, but, like, you know, you're a Star Trek geek, you know, like somebody. It could, you know, maybe that's in your profile on Facebook or whatever social networking site we're using at the time. It's plugged into your glasses. You walk into a location.
This is
that person over there. It can actually, like, you could, it could, like, light up the person in your little glasses, augmented reality, and say, that person over there is also a Star Trek geek. And you could be like, I better stop being a Star Trek geek. That guy looks like a
total
dork. Yeah.
Like a wacko that the government are recruiting to fly drones.
But maybe to introduce you to a girl. We could find a little, you know, like, it, can you imagine that if it's punching up, like, the Facebook information? There's a funny video online about the glasses where this guy's on a date and the glasses are feeding him all this information about the date and then it goes horribly wrong kind of thing. But you know, there's an element
How
of that.
How does it go horribly wrong? Or maybe the girl doesn't want to go out with a guy with glasses. That might be
bad. It is not that funny, but
no, all right.
But I did think I was thinking, which actually leads into our other topic about this sort of stuff is, you have to wear it, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, Sergey Brin, the guy who runs Google or owns Google, you know, he's been out there wearing this stuff, and you know. It's not like the LeVar Burton Star Trek Next Generation thing on your eyes, but it still doesn't look
cool.
It
still looks kind of, it doesn't look cool yet.
Yeah, and that's what they've been saying, that the biggest thing about it is they need to make it cooler, you know, like in the wearable tech.
It's fashionable.
It's the fact that it's supposed to look cooler and things like that. But they got a long ways to go before that quite happens, you know. But, I mean, think about all the people with the Bluetooths in the ear.
I do not own. I want to say this, though.
I mean, the Bluetooth earpiece, yes. Obviously, since Bluetooth could do a lot of things. But
I have a BlackBerry, and with the BlackBerry comes basically a set of headphones.
Yeah.
And because I don't want to be a Bluetooth guy, when I need to use the headphones, I will put these earbuds in, and it looks like I'm listening to a Walkman. And it's really fumbly in the car because you're trying to put both of them in. But I don't want to wear a Bluetooth because I think they look...
You can just put one in your ear, you know, that's an option for you.
Yeah, but then you've got the other bit hanging down.
It's kind
still
of annoying, but you can do that.
But the Bluetooth looks caught sign of, like, obnoxiously goofy.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, when that first came out, that was like, oh, big thing to put it in there. It was almost like a little bit of bling or something like that. But nowadays, you know, you see somebody walking around with a Bluetooth in your ear, you're like... Come on, man. I mean, you're not getting that. First of all, nobody uses the phone anymore, right? I mean, how many times do you talk to any people? I guess it could pipe text into your ear or something like that. But that's sort of funny. I was at a wedding not too long ago where somebody who was a part of the wedding,
okay,
not the central bride and groom, was wearing the Bluetooth thing.
Oh, during the wedding?
During the wedding ceremony. And I thought... I hope you don't get a... If you got a call and you touched your ear, that would be very offensive sort of thing. But I'm just thinking, I mean, the Bluetooth is one thing, but boy, now you stick some stuff on your face. You know, like, you know, it's going to be... You're going to be wearing the glasses. You're not even a glasses wearer normally. You're going to be wearing a pair of glasses to begin with.
The thing on your ear, thing in front of you, all those electrons and stuff. I mean, isn't everyone worried that cell phones give you cancer? Isn't that the old rumor? Or they give you brain tumors and then you've got all this stuff attached to you?
Yeah.
And
there's something
glowing like a kid from Chernobyl.
Being geeky has gotten cooler over the. I mean, it's, you know, like there's an element to that, but
yes.
I realize it's not current geeky. You have to be weirdly oddball retro geeky. Like, you know, like it's still not cool to wear the Bluetooth thing here. But if you, like, you know, you have the old school glasses, it's sort of like a retro geek kind of thing, wearing your Chuck T's or whatever it is. It's this sort of ironic geekiness.
Yeah, it needs to look real geekiness. Exactly. If it looks like something no one else has had, then you're automatically drawing attention to yourself.
Yep. There's a guy named Steve Mann, who actually has been doing augmented reality. He actually calls it mediated reality because his version of it is more about what it adds to what you're actually looking at. He's been doing it for 35 years. He's been designing and wearing different types of computers. And there's an interesting article in... I don't know what it was in, actually. But there was an article talking about, you know, his whole background. He was out commenting a little bit on the Google Glass.
Was this the guy where it looked like he was wearing like a...
Yeah,
like,
I mean, like, this is an old version.
There's
an old version.
No, he looked like a whack job.
Like, that picture was from 1996, where he's wearing, like, a whole thing
on his head. He looked
like
Tin Man from Wizard of Oz.
But his newest version, which I don't think I have a picture of, the newest version is really not much bigger. But, like, I'm showing you pictures, but nobody else can see them. Pictures of, like, what augmented reality, like, would look like, where it would show the street name that you're on, like, right in your viewfinders. You know. And, like, his version of it is also using it to... Like, if you needed to see infrared or something like that, you know, heat signature, it would put it right into your picture, like, so that you'd be able to see things, but maybe you'd be able to see a further distance because it's using infrared technology or something like that. And it's sort of notion. But he looks really dorky, right?
Yes.
Now, he looked pretty dorky to begin with, so I'm not sure that this was, like, a big step down for him. But, like, you know, he's been talking about all this sort of stuff with it coming out there. But he talks about – he actually is kind of skeptical about the Google Glass thing because – He's saying he's been doing this for 35 years, and he's figured out there's definitely some problems mechanically. Like, if you don't have that camera directly centered, like if you have the augmented reality directly centered, like if you're looking at a viewfinder differently, like neurological damage can result
if it's
giving you some
oddball
picture. Like, he mentions that all this stuff's in one eye.
Okay.
And if you have one eye that's always focusing on a different distance than you're focusing with your other eye because you're looking down the street, but you've got a projection of something on the other eye, and if you haven't set it up so that you can keep that focus, you'll screw your eyes up. your eyes will freeze. Just like in The Jerk, when Steve Martin invented that placeholder that went on the front of his glasses, and everybody's eyes got crossed, and he lost a big class action suit.
Well, luckily, they have robot dogs that you can now have a robot dog to help lead you about.
They could guide you around.
When your eyesight's shot from using Google Glass.
He tells some story about, like, there's some psychologist back in 1890s who had invented a pair of glasses that turned the world upside down.
The point of that being what?
He was being a psychologist experimenting in Victorian England. I don't know. His name since he was English, we'll say George Stratton. So anybody want to look up George Stratton in the 1890s, the renowned psychologist George Stratton. So after a couple of days, it doesn't look upside down to you anymore. Like, if you wear them all the time, you'll now be able to function because your brain adjusts that image to fit with the what you're doing and all that sort of stuff. And when you took them off, like, you took them off, it wasn't like the world then became upside down. It's that your brain had adapted to it. But, like, in his quote, he said, when he took the glasses off, his vision had called a bewildering air. Like, you know, there's just something weird about it now, right? You know, like, everything's a little bit backwards. And so, anyway, so this guy was talking about how, like, if your glass is just a little bit off, you'll adjust to it. But now, like let's say it moves everything over a foot because the camera's like off center from where your eyes are and stuff like that.
You'd be over. You'd be
like,
all over.
You know, like you can adapt to it and you'll be able to do that. But now, when you take it off, you might not be able to go back to it and all this sort of stuff.
You would need your Rolls Royce Wraith.
That's right.
To drive you around because you wouldn't be able to see properly.
And really, you know, once you get the stuff where it's all augmented and all that sort of stuff, it's only another step until you get to that bad movie with Bruce Willis where you don't actually even go anywhere. You just send the robot out there.
12 Monkeys?
No, that was a good movie.
The robot movie with Bruce Willis.
It was the one Avatar.
That's not Bruce Willis.
It was the things that's were called Avatars. Planets. Oh, boy. It was the one where, like, basically...
AI?
No.
With the little kid from Sixth Sense?
He was in Sixth Sense with Bruce Willis, but he wasn't...
Forbidden Planet with Robbie the Robot.
Oh, boy.
RoboCop. RoboCop 2. Terminators 1 through 3.
Yeah.
Any other movie with Arnold?
This is some good... Surrogates.
Surrogate. All right.
It was basically where people would just stay in their apartment, and they would... harnessed into their stuff, and the robot version of them that was much better looking would go out in the world, and they would just look at all the things through the screen and deal with all that sort of stuff without ever having to go anywhere. You know, that was a bad movie.
Yeah, good thing he did Die Hard 5.
Hopefully we don't head to that situation, you know, and all that sort of going on. One of the interesting, like all these cameras, right, all these cameras going to be attached, going to be connected to the internet. Again, it raises all these privacy things, governmental type stuff. But here's the theory, right? You know, in addition to the fact that we're all worried about all these cameras that can look at us and do the traffic cameras, the closed circuit cameras. Well, if everybody's wearing a camera, right? Now it's what Steve Mann was talking about is that instead of Big Brother, maybe it's Little Brother. Like, we're all filming what's going on, and so it's less likely that something bad happens to you because everybody can find it out. Like, you know, if basically everybody has a wearable computer or a wearable camera, and everything's being filled in, you know, if you get mugged or the government abuses you or something like that, that information is available anywhere. I mean, look at all the...
But remember, you can't self... If you got mugged, your mugger would have it on film. But remember, you can't self-incriminate
yourself. If you had a camera, you can do that sort of stuff. I mean, think about it. This goes all the way back to Rodney King and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Where people... If everybody's filming what's going on, maybe this helps us from resisting government oppression because you're all gathering data up for the world. You know, you're trying to put out... I'm putting my glasses half full spin on this sort of stuff.
I don't know. If you're Rodney King, I don't think your camera lasted the first 3 seconds.
No, but it's the person who was filming it, you know? There was just up the one in College Park, and this is appropriate as we were heading the time when I got to watch Virginia play Maryland, but up in College Park when they had one of these fights when the police were beating up on somebody, and people were all filming
it.
You know, y'all got the cameras. Now, instead of having the cell phone cameras that are all available... If you have a camera installed on your head, all that information is being gathered.
No, that's true.
And what is this just like?
Terminators 1 through 3?
Just like the Russian dashboard cameras from the comet.
Oh!
You know, the Russian dashboard cameras where we made fun of all these people for all the accidents. Well, if we're all basically wearing Russian dashboard cameras, essentially, we're all gathering up this information, and the next time a comet comes by, we'll all be
throwing ourselves onto the roofs of cars to try and get insurance.
All the footage.
That's what it was.
Remember in that Batman movie where, Bruce Willis designs this software that, like, we've been so Bruce Willis fixated with it. It turns all the cell phones so that they can figure out what's going on kind of thing.
And then he uses it at the end and then tells what's his name to turn it down because he's upset that this is ruining everyone's privacy.
Exactly. And I always thought, how are you going to process the data? And that's really the problem, is how do you deal with all the data? But boy, if everybody's got a camera on their head and everybody's car has four cameras around every side of it, I mean, forget about Google Street View and all its little camera stuff. Everything.
The last thing I need is some random do-gooder passerby turning footage of me into the police, of me giving the dog a tap. That's exactly. Giving the robot dog a kick. The last thing I need is someone across the street getting all involved in my business going, look at that guy, cruelty to robot dogs.
Next time we get together, and if you notice I have a pair of cumbersome glasses on,
okay,
you better be nice to dogs.
All right. I think that's it for this week.
I think so.
Twitter, email?
You wanna... email, of course. And if you could send the car stories, that would be great, at atlanticvoice@gmail.com.
That's right.
Twitter is @Atlantic_voice. It's always hard to say that one. It just doesn't roll off the tongue to say whatever, but it's @Atlantic_voice is our Twitter thing.
I need to find that little kid up in Maine who got beat us to Atlantic Voice. Why anyone would want to take that? I have no idea.
Yeah, the blog, of course, is AtlanticVoice.net, and you can find all the we've recently rejiggered the arrangement there, so now all of the podcasts are on the right side with new titles, so you can tell what they were and what they're about and a little bit of description and things like that. So for those of you who are just stumbling into us now and would be interested, you can go check out the back catalog.
Back episodes.
We're, if I did the count right, 12, 13 episodes, maybe 14 now.
Many hours of entertainment.
You know, so on your next road trip, you can plug that into the car when it's not surveilling you and listen to our podcast.
I think that's it for this week. No dogs were harmed in the filming of this episode. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
You have been listening to the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us at atlanticvoice.net, email us atlanticvoice@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter @Atlantic_voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.